Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
Life is full of personal wins, whether it's cleaning your house, getting that dream car, or checking off your to-do list. Winning at life is a great feeling. And with the State Farm Personal Price Plan, you can keep winning when you create an affordable price just for you by bundling home and auto. So give yourself a round of applause. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with a personal price plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Welcome to Nerdist Podcast number 604. Here's the URL I'm going to throw in your ears. FunComfortableTour.com is the website for my upcoming stand-up tour, Fun Comfortable. And it'll give you tickets and info links for all of the cities. And there's more being added. Right now there's 14 or 15 up, but ultimately there'll be more than that. So keep checking in. Tour starts mid-January, runs through May as of now. And come out. Come to shows. They'll be fun. And I have, they're not technically part of the tour, but I am doing Cobb's December 11th to the 13th. In San Francisco. So that's all the stand-up business coming up as I'm sort of getting ready for the next special, which will probably be called Fun Comfortable, I guess, if that seems to stick. So go check that out, which is my pal Joe Latrulio. Joe Latrulio, you might know from the initially from The State. That's where I first became pals with him, and he's been in a million and a half things, and right now he's promoting his web series Beef, which is available on iTunes and Amazon. Michael Ian Black is in it, Christopher Maloney, and of course Joe Latrulio. Joe's a great guy and a great improviser and a good sketch guy, and I really liked having him on. So here we go, the Nerdist Podcast number 604 with Joe Latrulio.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
A little, does it feel weird?
A little, yeah, because usually I'm up earlier, and today I slept in a little bit.
What is sleeping in?
10.
Whoa!
Yeah.
That really is sleeping in.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
I'm usually up around 7.
You lazy mm-hmm. fuck, how dare you!
You son of a bitch!
How dare you!
So, what was the cause for the sleep in today? What opened up in your life?
We had some friends come over, and we had a little viewing of Whiplash, the movie Whiplash. And
tea party?
And it was a bit of a tea party.
No, key party.
Oh, key party.
Yeah.
A key party and a tea party.
A tickle party?
It was a tickle party. It was a feather party.
It was a tickle feather party.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're not sleeping with everyone's partner, so you're just tickling
you're
everyone.
Just tickling a little bit.
Yeah. And you're
how far can we get?
And how many hours can we tickle each other with a feather? It turns out several, because you slept in until 10 this morning.
Until 10. Many hours.
I mean, you have a lot of feather scrapes all over you.
Yeah, I have some scars. I have some battle scars from it, but they feel kind of nice.
It was worth it.
It was worth it.
It was totally worth it.
For sure. Yeah.
So you're here to promote Tickle Party, which
digital series. it does come with your own feather. You know,
what?
If you do buy the DVD, it does come with your own feather.
I don't understand. If it's a web series, now I'm breaking down the premise.
No, you're
a web series. How do you order the DVD?
Okay, you can order the DVD.
Okay,
that's I guess that's all I'm saying.
Gotcha,
you can actually order it. And if you do, you will get a feather.
So you watch the movie Whiplash.
Watch the movie Whiplash. You know, I liked Miles Teller and I liked J.K. Simmons, but I didn't like the movie that much.
Really?
Yeah.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah. But I don't want to talk crap about Whiplash. I mean, these guys, it's hard to make a movie. Here's what I realized watching this movie. And anytime I watch a movie that I don't like, I'm often, you know, it's hard to get a movie done.
Yeah, it's
like everyone lighten up. Like Joe, lighten up on the movie a little bit.
Yeah.
You know how hard it is to get a movie made?
It's damn near impossible.
It is.
But maybe you should have spent less time tickling each other.
Well, and then
I could
have
paid attention to the movie.
Well, the more I think about it, the more I enjoyed the movie now, because but for the wrong reasons. Like I was able, I now associate that movie with friendship and very soft touches on my skin.
Right. You know? Well, maybe that's something that you need to be dealing with then.
Yeah.
To try to really understand.
I agree.
Why it is that you hate being happy so much. It just really turned into a therapy session. Why do you hate good things, Joe?
Why don't you like feeling good, Joe?
I always enjoy seeing. Well, I mean, I think the first time I met you was with The State, and it was spring, MTV Spring Break,
right?
1994.
But before, after Singled Out or before Singled Out?
That was before.
It was before, right?
I did one show before Singled Out, and I went to Spring Break that year. There was a Spring Break in San Diego.
Okay.
And you guys were there. And it was really fun to meet
probably
all of you.
Probably in tights doing something.
You were doing some comedy chicanery.
Yeah.
And
chicanery. Thank you for putting that word in here.
And it's funny because I constantly run into... It's sort of like how... I run into a State person like every few days. Like I was at lunch the other day. Ken Marino was there having lunch with his wife. I see Tom Lennon, you know, just because of various work things.
Right.
I'll run into Carrie Kinney at the grocery store. Like, there's something about... I'm not saying it's a conspiracy, but...
Right, right.
You guys are trying to trap me in some way.
There's a lot of us. You're gonna run into us one way or the other.
I ran into Michael Patrick Jan at a movie a few months ago. Kevin Allison's really the only one that I never really run into.
Well, how often are you in New York?
Not that often.
That's why. I bet if you were there, you'd...
He needs to be trying harder to make sure...
He needs to bring you into his fold is what needs to happen. You know.
Yeah, figuratively.
It is strange, and figuratively, it is strange knowing those guys for so long and seeing everyone do so well. Strange and exciting, but like the reunion that we just had was like a thrill because... Suddenly, you look around and you're seeing these people that you've known since you're 17 years old and you're middle-aged and talking about, like, putting your butts in pudding and, you know, and dipping your balls into things at, like, 40-something. But it was okay. It was like, you know what? Yeah, this is our little part of history right here.
Hey, guys, we're still dipping
our
balls.
We're still dipping our balls. Yeah.
And Carrie was like, well, I don't...
Except for...
I don't... And then she's like, I'm kidding. And then she just pulls out these giant fake balls. Which she would.
Ta-da!
Carrie Kinney has... She has the trademark on saying the most offensive things with the sweetest smile.
Oh, with the sweetest smile and the quickest of wit. Like, she... I love her. She's like a sister. Like, the most talented sister I've ever had in my life.
I adore her so much.
Like... She's quick. She's quick on her feet. And, like, you know, she just says things. Like, you're right. Things will come out of her mouth, and you'll be like, what? And then be laughing before you even kind of understood what you heard. I don't know. There was something about...
So, coming out of anyone else, you'd be like...
Yeah. Like, whoa.
Sir. Madam.
Madam. Carrie. Dear madam.
Both Carrie. So, when did the State officially stop...
Happening. I think the final straw was after we recorded an album down in the Bahamas, which was like January of 96. Like the CBS special was in October of 95, and then in January 96 we went down and recorded an album, and then there was nothing left to do after that.
Sketch comedy is very hard. Now, I know that that's a very simple oversimplification, but it is very hard, because especially... With a group that size.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even if you just had four people in the group, there would still be, like, various... Because everyone has their own idea about what comedy is.
Right.
So how do you, you know, when you have 100 members...
When it's just 160,000 of us. you're right. It becomes trickier, and then you have to kind of... You're left to kind of decide material on votes.
Yeah.
Yeah, like it becomes that kind of simple in a way.
Not every sketch comedy group can hang in there like you two, who I'm convinced is a sketch comedy group now.
They give their sketches away for free on iTunes.
Yeah, that's, I didn't answer
like,
these
watch
sketches.
This.
Yeah. I didn't answer these sketches. I mean, look at it. If you look at that, Bono has played a series of characters throughout year.
He was brooding desert guy. Then he was the fly.
Then he was the fly. Yeah, and then he was Potmark guy. Whatever.
Potmark,
then he was Beelzebub for a while. Like he played that devil. That you know, like the red
Mephisto.
Mephisto. Yeah, Mephisto. Yes. He played Mephisto.
You're right. He has a lot of masks. Bono does.
It is a sketch comedy group.
Yeah,
you know, with the
and
edge.
Larry Mullen, the straight guy, always keeping that beat.
Always. Yeah, he's got to keep the beat going. He's a great straight guy.
Great straight man.
Yep.
I saw. Have you ever seen U2 in concert?
I have, but it was dumb because it was at the LA Coliseum, and my seats were so far back.
Yeah,
that it would have been like watching them on an iPhone that you were holding across the room. Not even the 6 Plus. I'm talking iPhone 5.
Yeah.
And, but this was years ago. I think it might have been during the Pop Mart tour. And they were just... The Coliseum is so big, and they're so far away that it was silly.
It's I saw them for their Joshua Tree tour in like 87 at the Orange Bowl in Miami.
Oh, wow.
And that was really thrilling. That was an exciting concert.
What a good time to...
Yeah, I mean, they kind of like just came on the scene in on a mass level.
Well, when I did the Oddball Comedy Tour, one of the things that I was most excited about on the tour was playing Red Rocks, which of course was home to the famous Sunday Bloody Sunday video that kind of blew them up over here.
How was that?
It was amazing,
yeah, right? Like,
of course,
you're
it was
outside,
amazing.
You're in this incredible amphitheater. I've never been there. That's one place I'd love to see.
And that was one of those situations where they just happened to be kind of filming a documentary, and they just happened to catch that song. They just happened to catch it.
Right.
And then just put it out as video, and then that's the thing that, you know.
I had that VHS tape, that Under a Blood Red Sky U2 tape.
You know, it implies to comedy, too, or any kind of performing, is just catching the happy accidents, you know.
Yeah.
They could have planned that video for months, and it may not have turned out, you know, but how do you... How can you... You can't really engineer the magic. It's hard to engineer the magic.
You can't. That's why I feel like so much of it is the camera going... We should just record it in case.
Yeah.
Which I feel is kind of the, you know, the main
and then you'll
philosophy
have
now. Just get it. Just record
100 versions of it not working and then one where you're like,
yeah, one might.
Wait
and
a minute.
It'd be worth it. You know.
You and I had parallel... audition tracks for the longest time.
We did
before I said I can't do this anymore.
You were done.
And then I was like, I'm just gonna go make a thing myself.
Smart, by the way. Lucky how that worked out.
Well, it worked out okay. Yeah. But
go on. I'm sorry.
But no, I was just saying we were constantly, you know, there was a handful of people, and I was always delighted to see you at auditions because it always, whenever I saw people that I liked, it always made me more comfortable.
Yeah, that's nice.
And but how many crappy, shitty pilots did we
both like? I feel like we've been in the game for a while,
a really long time.
I'm a little long into tooth,
yeah,
as it were. But you're right. Like, it's so interesting as doing it for as long as I've done it to see those rooms and the people that you meet in those rooms and then like down the line you run into them again and be like, hey, remember when that awful time we had to audition for this thing? Or I don't know, there's a sense of like achievement and accomplishment that is nice to witness after, you know.
Well, you know what's crazy is that now we're getting into numbers in the business, which if you said in any other profession you'd be like, oh, that guy is a, of course he's the head of that, you know. It's like it's a lot to say, like, he's got 20 years experience in this thing. Like, that's a fucking long
time. It's a long time. 20 years experience in anything
except
for this.
To be doing something. Yeah.
Yeah.
So this year was my 20th year in television, and yours probably like 23, maybe? 22, 23? Because the state was...
94. That was...
Oh, 94.
94.
That's when
the state premiered. Maybe 93, but like...
Yeah.
But you're right. It, you know, to have that many years.
Like if you met an old guy and it's like he's been a whittler for 20 years, you'd be like, wow, that's the longest you can do anything.
Talk to Lawrence. He's whittled before. He's been doing it for 20 years. 20 years he's been whittling.
Oh my God.
So he would know how to make. Of course he would know
he's
how
the
to do this.
The oldest person in the world. Okay. You know what's kind of funny though is that it seems like, you know, this of course the 20 years is a significant part of our lives.
Yeah.
But if you started something when you were 60,
right,
you could conceivably live to 80.
Get there to 80.
You could do something for 20 years.
Whittling would be the exact thing you should pick up at 60.
That's
one would
what happens.
That's conducive to a 60-year-old.
You know why? Because the older you get, your eyesight gets better, your motor skills improve.
It's better to have sharp objects in your hand at
always,
that age. Always.
Where you're just 60, like right near your finger or children, like always.
You're going to have a porch at that point, you would think, at that age.
Absolutely.
To have like an ice cold pitcher of lemonade to be by your side.
At all times. And a spouse who has barely been able to tolerate you, but then is just...
But will bring you finger sandwiches.
Bring you finger sandwiches, but she's just too old at that point for any other options.
That's right.
And so you're stuck. You're glued together,
yet you know you're getting sandwiches, lemonade. You've made a bunch of bird callers at this point.
Yeah.
You know, you've whittled them down.
This is why there needs to be like an elderly dating service, like Grandr, you know, Grandr, for old people who just want to hook up and talk each other's ears off. I've heard, and I'm sure that people can comment in the thread on where this podcast posts about, but you know, people in retirement homes, like like they're super randy. Like they will try to fuck you.
There has to be an app, or there should. Like I mean, there. Who would use it? I guess they would.
Yeah,
but you're right. There, my parents are in Florida. They live in Florida, and they were telling me about a friend who experienced something like this. Where like in, oh no, it was a news story. It was a news story about a person in a retirement community that was literally kind of flirting and making moves on their fellow retirees, their neighbors, like, and got really kind of worked up about it and started essentially getting handsy with the other people in this community.
Really?
Yeah.
Did they enjoy that, or were they not too cool with it?
No, they were not cool with it, and there was I think the person was arrested.
Yeah, because like
I mean, but to your point, there was a lot of energy in the area.
Whipping
in the
your old testicles at someone is just like hitting them with a paddle ball. Like,
yeah,
it's
yeah.
I have a bit in my set about how I went to I was in a locker room of I was at a hot springs in Colorado Springs.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in the locker room, and I had never really seen an old person's balls before. And it was, they were like comically low.
They hung low.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Like,
yeah.
And they wobbled to and fro. No. I'm sorry.
No, the lob was over the plate.
I
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
They hung comically low. Yeah. And of course, it's fun to point and laugh and be like, man, grab
right,
me.
Right.
But at the same time, you're like, oh no. You know,
like that's not... You saw your future.
Well, of course, because that's just what happens.
But like for me, I'm looking forward to that moment.
Why?
Well, because
why do you want to have to roll up your balls with like a tuna can key?
Because there's something. Well, there's an image that'll stay for a while.
You shouldn't have like, to roll up your balls like a butterfly's tongue.
This is such a Looney Tunes image. Like, I feel like I should swig back a jug with three X's on it now just to, like, kind of get there and use that key. No, there's something about, I don't know, there's something about the primal swing of
I guess
of the
so,
balls
but
that
at
I
that point, I just feel like
be liberating.
I just feel like they're in the way, you know, like,
right.
At that point. It's,
you're in danger of sitting on them all
the
time.
Yes, you're in danger of sitting on them or tripping over them or you know, like them kind of smacking in between your knees like an alarm clock, like an old-timey alarm clock.
They have that. They have that as a sound on the iPhone.
And there's the old ball
alarm clock. Oldie ball. Oldie balls.
Oh, time to get up. Yeah, I don't know. It's I think there's a high instance of sexual activity in retirement homes.
Well, you feel like there's that last gasp of this is it, like of
I don't know if it's always lucid. Like, I think it's they're just it their might brains not be lucid, are just but twisting, and they're just like, you know.
Right.
Just like you go into a zoo and a chimp tries to fuck your face. You know, like they just, there's right, just something right.
yeah.
like a little primal and broken about it. And yeah. I don't know if.
But it's also like a death rattle in a sense. Like there's only a few more years maybe before I'm able to really.
Yeah.
Have a shot at getting this done.
Yeah.
Of having sex for the last time. I don't know.
Listen, I think that's fine. If we want to, you know.
If we want to, you know, retire in a community and. If go these, hog wild.
Yeah, if these cotton munchers want to have at it with each other.
Look, if these key ball tuners want to go at it hard and do what they got to do to feel alive, then who
prunes,
am I to say don't do it?
Bankers wanna, prunes bankers want to go off on each other.
If
these taffy pullers want to have at it, then by all means.
These wrinkly sacks, I tell you, they could do whatever they'd like to do, but I'm not going to stop them.
If these dust launchers want to shoot condensed milk all over.
Like, if these mini beanbag swinging little guys want to.
Basically, the imagery is to be like throwing a bag of flour onto a dinosaur's back. Like, it'd be like imagine T-Rex skin, you know?
Taking a little, bag of flour.
Throwing
anyway,
it up
against a turtle shell.
Listen, I think, it's good to respect the elderly.
They've lived. I think the point of what we're
the
saying
point of what
here
we're saying is respect
your elders.
Your elders.
Yeah. Correct. This is fun. This is a wonderful interview.
It's great.
Because, no, it is. I agree.
A lot about
like,
you.
Well, it's nice because we don't hang a lot.
No,
you know,
we
don't see each other a lot. We're busy people. And I love that we can kind of just talk like this.
Yeah.
Like silly nonsense, but fun talk.
It's 100% okay.
Yeah.
It's 100% okay to talk about how you want to thrust yourself into the dry anthill of a woman who has 40 grandchildren. There's nothing
stopping
wrong
me from
with
doing
that.
No.
About trying
it's,
to it, penetrate.
Dare I say it's healthy.
The arid regions. The arid nether regions.
making being my own Lawrence of Arabia. My own Lawrence of Arabia.
Lawrence of Arabia. Yes.
We got there. We finally got there.
We got that.
We got there.
Put away your Peter O'Toole. Done.
Nice.
Done.
It's done.
God, what do we talk about now?
God,
like,
now what do we do?
How do we come back from that? Feel,
we came back around.
Just sort of looped. Are you performing live anywhere?
I'm not. You know, no. No.
You son of a bitch.
I should, though.
Why
I had, the last time I performed live was with you for Thrillist Adventure
Thrilling
Hour.
Thrilling Adventure Hour.
Which was so much fun.
Great. Thrilling.
So much fun.
Thrilling's a blast.
And dare I say, terrific Wilder. You did a terrific Gene Wilder.
Oh, did I?
Yes.
I don't remember.
Oh, you did. Yes, the whole speech of, Exhibit A.
Oh, wrong, sir.
Wrong, sir.
Wrong.
It's great.
Yes. Oh, that was really fun. That was really, really
had
fun.
Had you done that before? The Thrilling Adventure Hour?
I've done it a bunch, yeah. I would do it more if I had more time.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not just inviting myself on the show. I mean, the Bens have said, like, oh, let us know when you're around if you want to. And they never fail to disappoint with a nice, juicy character thing. And it's always...
The fans are rabid. It was incredible.
The fans are amazing. The community's amazing.
Yeah.
Their writing, month in, month out, is so... They just knock it out of the park every time.
Did you ever write? Do you write?
No, I mean, yeah, I did. I don't write movies,
right?
But you know, like I write on my shows. And
yeah,
I write stand up, and I, you know, like I used to write for a magazine. But I don't. But like,
was that ever kind of a a strong creative voice for you, just writing, or has it always been kind of a conversation or talking? Like,
for me, it was always a function. It was always like, it was more functionality of like, well, I want to do this thing, so I need to write this thing, or I'm working on a show and I need to write this thing. I'm writing stand up, you know.
Right.
But I consider myself more of a performer than a writer, even though I do write, but I don't sit down and be like, I'm writing I'm writing a thing today that I'm going to, you know, like I write when I need to be.
When you need to.
Yeah.
It's interesting because I also consider myself more of a performer, but writing, you know, starting with The State became such an important part of kind of defining your own voice. Like, it was something that I never would have pursued really, but because of the amount of people that were in the group and how important it was to, you know, for you to write to get material on there, became a part of me learning how to express myself.
Yeah.
Whereas up until that point, it was just performing or acting or hamming or joking or whatever.
Right.
Like, suddenly writing became important to me as like a defining.
I think
voice.
I think it's a good skill set to have, and it's certainly. I think the more things that you can do. A friend of mine's an actor, and she's a performer, and she's about to direct something. And I was like, yeah, then this is awesome, because you'll always have that dimension now of people will be able to say, like, writer, director, actress, you know? Like, it's such a cool, it just adds more to the, it just gives you more options.
Gives you more options, yeah. Like, yeah, you broaden the portfolio.
Unless you're terrible at it.
Yeah,
then it takes away your options. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't do it.
It doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. Yeah.
Are you auditioning do you audition for stuff still?
Sometimes, yeah. I haven't so much because of the show. There's limited time to, like, work on other things. But, yeah, from time to time, I'll still audition.
And what is your audition process? Turn my phone. I left my phone on. I'm a bad person.
No,
I apologize.
No, you're not.
I'm turning it
off
now.
Everyone does. I prepare. I work on it a lot. I like to know the material before I go in.
Good idea.
You know, well, I like to know it well.
Ooh,
so
that's a better idea.
Yeah, like, so I don't have to look at the paper. But in general, I hate auditioning. Every actor does. Every actor does, and I dare say that I think some actors who are great actors give terrible auditions. Like, that process, as we all know, is the most difficult, stressful, non-conducive to being relaxed and creative.
Yes,
as you can possibly create.
Yes,
it's like, come here, we're gonna stare at you and do. So I go in there. How I kind of, my defense mechanism is just know your material really well.
I just was never able to take over a room with scripted auditioning, like, the way that I can with.
I can't give good room either.
Now, like, with hosting auditions, I had no problem with.
Yeah.
I had a really strong idea. I knew exactly. I would always kind of make it my own as a way to show them more like, well, I'm kind of auditioning you.
Right.
If you don't like what I'm doing, then don't hire me, because this is what I do.
The swagger. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's kind of, yeah.
But I did not have that same thing with scripted auditions. I never, never had that. I always went in tentative and like, I don't know. And,
yeah. Same. I never really kind of overtook a room. Like, any good audition I had was always, it was always with just a choice I made in the scene, rather than like, man, he really overtook the room, you know, like, and I've seen people leave rooms, before, you know, I went in, that were like, so like confident. You know, the people they leave, they're like, okay, they're leaving. They're like, all right, yep, you too. Like, they're mid-conversation, and they come out, and they're like completely confident. You're like, oh, God.
And you can just hear through the door, like, everyone's laughing.
You hear, like,
laughing.
And you're like, oh, God.
Fuck.
And then you go in like, hey, how are you? Good day. Hi. Hi. Do you just jump? Yeah, we're jumping. Okay, great. It's they're like, oh, I had to follow that guy. I had to follow the charmer.
Yeah, a lot of times the only thing that's missing is just making the room all glass, so you could just see in and watch the person before you kill it.
Yeah,
before you go in, and you're like, "Hey, how's it going?" I feel like an open micer following Louis C.K.
Exactly. Just rifling through your papers.
So I have some thoughts on the stuff I'm working out.
So I don't need to read it all. You guys are good.
Crinkle. Did you have, what was your worst audition? Like, what was an audition that you were like, oh, man?
Usually they were commercial auditions.
Yeah.
Just because they're so, they can be very demeaning in terms of, like, because you're basically, there's no two ways about it. You're essentially a theatrical prostitute.
Right.
And whatever they tell you to do, you will do for money.
For money, yeah.
And so you just feel a little like, ugh. But I think I had a couple really, I mean, I've had many, many, many bad audition experiences, but I think the worst one was kind of the other person's fault. I think it was the casting director's
fault. Oh, it was like kind of a two-person, like you're with a partner.
It was just me and this woman, but it was auditioning for, it was a sketch show, and so you had to come in with characters.
Uh-huh.
And one of the characters, this should tell you how long ago it was, Craig Kilborn was still on the air. And and so I did this Craig Kilborn impersonation, which was, I go, well, this is basically, you know, like it was the idea of the template for his delivery.
Yeah.
Which was, blah, 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 here's the joke. And so, he would always like punch in the third, like he would, you know, one, two, and then three was like, now the joke. And so I did this in the room, and the casting director, I don't know what the fuck she was thinking, but she said, okay, well, I mean, that's fine, but, you know, what would Craig Kilborn say about something specifically, like, what would he say about
the election this year?
It wasn't even, bad. She goes, what would he say about the Egypt Air crash? Like, there had just been the Egypt Air plane crash had literally just happened that day.
Oh, my God.
And so in my mind, my brain is spinning. Yeah. Like, what would he fucking say? What would he say about a plane? He would say, no, what would he say? What are you talking about? And so it just, I didn't know. I don't know. And so the reason it was a bad experience is because in my whorish mind.
Right.
I actually start to do it. You know, it's like, I can see my house from here. You know, it's just like, see the pyramids. Like, I actually start trying to do it and feeling inside like,
you're on the whipping post. You're totally
I can feel everything in me just feels like sour milk.
Right.
And I could feel my soul escaping through my feet, my lower extremities, just bleeding out. My soul bleeding out.
You had an Ebola experience.
And I was kind of mad at, I was mad at her for suggesting it, and I was mad at me because I tried to do it, and it just was a, she felt weird, and I felt weird, and I just left sad.
She acknowledged it too then?
Like
no, she didn't?
Mm-mm.
No.
No.
Yeah, she didn't say like
she's a casting director. Right. She didn't give a shit.
Sometimes they don't pay attention. My worst experience was like before Superbad. It was after The State and Reno had started. I think David Wayne and Showalter were busy doing some movie. Anyway, I go to this audition, and right before the slate, she's like, you're going to slate your name, and then we're just going to talk a little bit, and then we'll go right into the scene. And so, hi, Joe Trulio. She's like, so you were in The State. I'm like, yeah. She's like, what is it like to, like, look around and all these members of The State are, like, doing so well, and they have all these shows, and you're still, like, auditioning and trying to make it in complete earnestness, she didn't even have a clue as the insecurity of any actor, let alone someone coming from a group that so defined their identity. Like, and
that woman,
I literally was like, I kind of laughed. Like, how do you say that? You either really are clueless or so mean, like so, like not setting.
And how do you not want to go
actor up? Okay, to
well,
at all?
I'm not doing like, well. And how do you feel that you have to audition someone who's not doing well? Where does that put you?
Where does that leave you on the scale?
Yeah. You know? If I'm a piece of shit, you're a shit wrangler. So we're both in it. Do you want me to read now?
We're stuck in it now.
Yeah.
Let's
whittle. How do you even... what do you say?
What do you say? I literally was like, well, literally gave the stock answer of like, yeah, no, I'm just doing what I can do. I'm here. And then did the scene and didn't pay attention to any of the notes that she gave me, which was don't improv. They just stick to the script. And
also, be more famous.
Literally, like, yes.
My second note.
I can't believe I have to audition you. You should be more famous.
Be more famous.
You should listen. Anyway, so I didn't pay attention and end up getting I got the job. That's the happy ending of this terrible story is that I ended up being humiliated and not listening to her at all, and still got
well,
the job.
Good for you.
I got through it.
But it does bring me to the next question, which is, how does it feel?
It's funny you bring this up. I'm glad you brought this around. The reason for this interview is...
I mean, I would get stuff like that, too, where they just sort of say insensitive things. And sometimes... And the casting directors can be... Sometimes they can be very pissy.
Yeah.
And it's bad enough if they're not present. But if they're pissy, then, you know, and you don't react well to it,
yeah.
Then you get the call from your agent like, what happened in there? They said you were not. And it's like, but they. Yeah, and then you just sound like a kid that no one's going to believe you.
That's
like,
right.
No, I know. Okay, fine.
No, but see, what she said was like, okay. Look here, in my eye line, her eye line was like, then you'll like, Joe, shut up with the eye line. You made a scene. There's no excuse.
It's such a shitty process.
Own it. Own it.
Such a shitty process. I mean, it really.
It really is. It's. For me, it's like you're not you have to take control. You have to like go in there into a situation that you know you have no control over and somehow deal with it in a way that you feel in control enough to do a good job. To like, you know what I mean? Because that situation you are not in control at all in terms of whether or not you're getting that job.
It's almost like you have to release all the control to get the control, which is if you don't, you know, I don't know, if you don't live and die by it, if you feel like you know, whatever, if you can somehow release it and feel like you ultimately should go in as prepared as you can be.
Right.
And then just let it go. Whatever happens is going to happen.
Yeah.
And, you know, it,
one of the biggest challenges is just let it like exactly that, letting it go once you leave the room and getting it out of your head, because we've all, if you're an actor, you've left the room and be like, oh, I should have done that. That's what I could have done. And like that will just drive you insane.
Well, for one of I was never able to. I really wasn't able to do that with scripted stuff, but with hosting stuff, I don't know if this worked or not. But one of my sly little tricks was that
little tricks of the trade.
One of the tricks was when I was kind of doing whatever the copy was. You know, I would put it in my voice, or I would add. You know, like I would add little side jokes. And then I would slide in here and there. I would say, I would make a reference to the fact that I had been doing the show for a long time, where I was like, you know, for a long time on the show, we do this or this or this, because it would then paint me. It would just paint the picture that I was a part of this show and had been a fixture of the show for a long time. And I think it actually sort and it was very
it helped.
I don't
I'm sure
think
it helped.
It, you know, and if it served no other function than to make me feel like I had ownership over it,
right?
Which then, you know, has the cascading effect of, well, you know, now I'm more comfortable, or now I feel like it's my show.
You feel like you're being also seen in an accurate light.
But I was just so much more able to connect with. Because they want someone to come in and take ownership over it.
Yeah,
that's they want
they
that
want to be
more
shown
than
what to do. They don't know what they want.
It's not a you versus them thing. They want you to own it.
Correct.
Because then
correct.
Their job is done.
Correct. Yes.
And it makes their lives easier.
Yeah.
So it's not they're not looking at you.
Who likes to make decisions? No one does.
They don't. They're not looking at
but
you.
They
like
don't.
A,
but I don't sometimes. Like I get it. Like I guess I to your point I agree. Like they want someone to. To own it. And like, I don't want to have to decide between him and I just want someone to tell me. I want to look at that person and be like, oh yeah, that's
please be
great.
The guy. Please be the guy or
please
girl.
Be the guy.
Yeah.
So I don't you're right. That's a good point.
Because I have a lot of issues. I didn't want to go into casting, but it's just what was available at the time, and now I'm stuck here 15 years later.
In the grand high school metaphor of things, where do casting directors lie? Like, I feel like casting directors are the people that knew of the party, knew where the party was, and was happy that they got into the party, but, like, they don't throw the party.
Right.
They just bring people, they tell people about the party, and they're not cool enough to throw it or... I don't know. I feel like they're somewhere in there, casting directors.
Yeah, they're the, you know, in the drama club, they, like, handle the script notes.
Yeah.
You know, but they're never on stage. You know, it's funny. There are
That being said, there are some amazing
There are two types of casting people. There are casting people who just fall into it. They're a casting assistant at a college or whatever, and then they just end up casting. And then, and then, you know, there are legitimate...
Eyes for talent.
Like, Bialy, Thomas, like there are people, you know, Mark Hirschfeld, they're
Allison Jones.
There are people who they do it because they genuinely want to place good, they want to connect good people with good projects
I agree.
They really have a passion for it and they have a really good eye and they're really excellent at it. There are legitimately amazing
casting
agree. People. So I'm not shitting on all casting people.
Me neither.
But it is one of those jobs that people can happen into that maybe don't have the passion for it that, you know, I mean, because there's so many productions of all scale.
Right.
That
and someone's got to cast them.
Someone's got to be there to cast them and then, you know, and sort of some of the lower end stuff.
Right.
May not be you as.
Should. Yeah. You're
they may
right.
not be as invested.
Yeah.
In the process.
There are very good ones. Yeah. I didn't mean to kind of go off on that diatribe, but
especially if you're still auditioning, you know,
it's exactly, I
hey,
mean,
Joe, what you said,
look, you know, at some point, you know, I'm going to need a job again.
that's going to be the, it's going to be, what's your worst audition story?
Besides that one?
Is that the worst one or is that just one of them?
That had to be the worst one for sure.
But you
sure.
must have auditioned for a bunch of sketch stuff after the skate. Didn't you, Matt? You probably auditioned for Mad TV.
I didn't do...
SNL? Did you ever audition for SNL?
No. Because I just felt like we had done this the sketch show and I don't know, I never felt that on either of those shows, as good as they are, would ever have the amount of creative control that I had as a state member.
Right.
That being said, I've had terrible auditions. Good one. I've had a couple where I've gone in and not prepared after a night out all night, reeking of booze.
No, was the character hungover guy?
Nope.
Oh, okay.
Well, nope. Was shilling like, you know, downy Dylan. Dishwashing that, like, you know, just.
Shilling like Dylan. I like that.
Shilling like Dylan.
Yeah.
Yeah, like that was, you know, that wasn't, I wasn't proud of that moment. I was in the mid-90s at some point.
oh, the 90s.
Yeah, the 90s.
Of course, you say that now after having slept until 10 a.m. this morning. This audition's not going well, Joe.
I'm back in it.
Jolo. I like, do many people call you Jolo or is that just me?
Many people do. It's, I don't like it.
How about Jolo Contendere?
Which that's is fine. Okay. That's fine. That's better. I have a very, weird, issue with it and it's my own issue. Like
that's the truth. Because
it's an endearing, it's a term of endearment and no one means any harm by it. But like many people who don't know me, you know me, you know my first name is Joe, but like many people literally who just meet me think my first name is Jolo. And it just, I'm like, come on, man. Like, really? Like, yeah, well, Jolo. Like, there's
what a
space.
First name.
No, it's like, my name is Joe. Like, you know, I don't know. I, you know, my wife says I'm too sensitive about it. I probably am.
Okay, well, how about just to get rid of any confusion, I call you Joseph Lowe. Is that
better?
Is that better?
Better.
Okay, Joseph Lowe.
Joseph Lowe sounds like he could have been like a terrible dictator, like in Cambodia, like in the early 70s. Like
Joseph Lowe.
Rouge.
So
Mere Rouge.
Okay, so from now on.
Joseph Lowe.
From now on, no Jolo.
Yeah, that's no right. You can always call me
Jolo.
You can always call me Jolo.
Jews only live once.
Yeah.
Sure.
No, like Jello's fine. It's all fine. I have a weird. I have a weird name.
It's not a. Name. It's not a weird name, Latrulio. It's a nice Italian name.
Fine Italian boy.
He's a nice Italian boy.
A nice Italian boy.
Both your parents are Italian, or just the dad?
Just the dad is Italian. Mom's Irish.
Hey,
Italian Irish.
Oh, that's a good combo. I have that in my family too.
Do you?
I have cousins who are the product of that unholy pact of
of mirth and cheer and drink and laughter.
I mean, it's food. Just, you know, at the time. You know, a long time ago when scores of Italians and Irish were immigrating to New York, they didn't always get along great.
Mm-mm.
Sometimes they banged it out. And when they did.
No, my mother's father, the Irish side, my mother's Irish father,
he was
had a problem with
Italian?
My dad.
I'm sorry, what?
I missed it. What?
So he was too drunk to know he was fucking Italian.
Correct. Right. Correct. Okay. Yes.
And the Italian just wasn't very picky.
Correct.
Okay. Great. Good. So we got that.
We laid out the ground, the kind of like parameters of how we will identify both of these classes of people. Now that we have set it up.
Yes.
No, he had a problem with my dad. My because he was Italian.
Really?
Yeah. And my mother's mother, my grandmother, you know. Pulled him aside and be like, "Listen, your daughter cares about this this wop, and you're gonna let her date him." No, but it was an issue. You're right. You're absolutely right. It was back in the day. It was not. They were butting heads.
So the Irish person was, really
but it was very greasy.
The Italian person was just a small shiny potato.
Correct.
And they just tried to fuck.
The Irish were there first. You know.
Wait a minute. No, come on. You know, when did the Italians go from "he's nicer to see you" to "come on"? Like where?
Yeah,
linguistically, how did that happen? How do we
on
go
the
from,
oral on the AURAL map? Like how did that? How did we get there?
I don't know. You know, my great grandparents from.
You're right though.
My great grandmother was from Calabria. My great grandfather was from Naples, Italy, and they not Florida. And they so how did they go from? You know, they still, you know, up until they lived into their 90s, they died. They were married 72 years. They died within a month of each other.
Yeah.
My great grandmother died and my great grandfather died. And so.
What is that? Do you think that's a nor? I feel like Sicily, maybe it's louder there or something, you know. It completely raises the thing to say. I've never been. There's no reason why I would think that. But for some reason, I do. And I feel like Naples, Northern Italian, like my grandmother was from Ischia, like, which is like a little island off the coast of northern Italy. I feel like that's a very, like you're saying, more, I don't know, aristocratic or
the language is so it's so poetic. It's so the meter of it's so gorgeous to go from. It's a very nice to mi piace, mi piace.
Go over to Krabby Jack's?
What
the nickel
fuck,
beers?
You guys?
Come on, go to sodas.
Like, how do we go? How do we get from there to there?
You're right. I think Jersey. I think maybe just Jersey.
How do we go from "come on, you guys" to "come on,
come on,
come on"?
What are you talking about? Oh, it's classic.
I don't know how that. There must be a. I mean, New York is such a. The New York dialect must be such a hodgepodge of so many different languages.
Right.
Basically, just. Crashing together,
fighting to survive
in a fiery explosion of, I mean, it's like, you know, nine garbage trucks just coming together and exploding into come on,
deciding on that. And we're gonna, you know, and we'll just, those trucks will collide and we'll come out with, what are you talking about? Yeah. Come on,
so what are you. And again, another thing to put in the comment thread of this post is how did that become that?
How did that? Yeah, it's a solid question that I hope we get some answers from our listeners.
But so Irish and Italian is your
Irish
heritage.
And Italian. It's the heritage. I had a DNA test done of me.
Really?
Yeah, I sent it to Ancestry.com.
And what did they say?
Well, I'm 44% Greek Italy is how they do it. And
2%
then,
Cocker Spaniel.
And 2% Cocker Spaniel. It's weird.
Some weird DNA.
But it explains how I do bounce my head around a lot. I do, and sometimes I pee on the rug. But I don't get in trouble because I make a great face afterwards.
You got a great face.
You can't be mad at this face.
You can't be mad at that face. That's 2%.
I heard someone told me, like, after I told them I did that, they're like, oh, why did you do that? You sent your DNA to Ancestry.com? Now they own it. I'm like, own it for what? Like, this person was serious. I'm like, what are they going to – are they going to clone me?
Yeah.
They're like, well, I don't know. They could if they wanted to. I'm like, well, fine.
Joan clone truly.
Like, but there – clone low.
Clone low.
Clone low.
Clone Loke.
Clone, clone low.
Let's clone Tone Loke.
Clone Loke.
I just want to hear Wild Thing in stereo. I just want a clone Loke on each side.
Clone Loke.
Clone Loke.
Anyway, this person seemed to be concerned about it. Do I have reason to worry? What do you think?
Nah, I mean, I think it's ultimately just like a privacy thing where it's like you've given basically someone the password to your
to your
body.
To my DNA.
Yeah, you've given someone the password to your physical form.
My DNA can get hacked now.
Your DNA can get hacked.
There's something. There's a movie there, you guys. DNA hack.
Assword.
Assword.
I don't know. I guess it is like the ultimate privacy hack.
Right?
Someone having your code.
Yeah, your DNA code.
But then what are they going to do with it? Like, if they drop another Latrulio somewhere, you're going to be like, all right.
Yeah, I guess. I'll be a little weirded out. I'll be like, really? I guess I gave them the right to do it.
Yeah.
I can't really.
What are they going to do?
I don't own me.
I like that.
I don't own me anymore.
Ancestry.com is really just like, it could be just a shell corporation for like this weird.
Well, that's.
They're trying to create
a race. That's the dark Capricorn one of this whole conversation.
That's exactly.
Like, there is a major conspiracy with Ancestry.com.
That's really what they're about.
They're creating a trip to Mars as we speak.
They want to create the perfect race.
The perfect race.
To send to other planets.
Are we on Mars yet? We're on Mars, yeah.
We're still on Earth right now, as a part of
right now we are.
Oh, you mean
in general, like culture? We got the rover on there. What about the comet? What's going on with the comet? That thing land on it,
It didn't bounce off, but it powered down after about 60 hours.
So it's finally on there now.
It's finally on there, but it's no longer functional, as far as I know. And it did send back a bunch of data,
Okay.
And there do seem to be some type of. Organic compounds. Organic, of course, meaning carbon-based.
What if Armageddon is actually – the movie Armageddon is actually happening? That's what's happening on that comet right now. That comet was
Do you think
it.
They sent Bruce Willis to
yeah,
the comet?
Yeah, like what – they might be on the comet now. Like that comet, it's not just like for research. That comet
– Easy comet,
straight,
easy
straight
comet.
For us.
Yeah.
Come on, what are you going to do about
what are you
it?
Do?
About the comet.
Ah.
Come on.
Come on. Yeah, I don't know. I think – Mike, what it felt like was that – It was sort of, hooray, you know?
Right.
Hey, we still got some stuff.
we almost did it.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty amazing that they did, you know, like,
The fact that they even hit the thing.
Yeah, I could not make that wastebasket across the room.
Yeah.
And they fired,
They got, you know, half a light year. I don't know how far it is. And they got there.
You know what I didn't know that I found out after we landed the Curiosity rover on Mars?
You were involved.
Is that in the 70s, they landed one on Venus.
Did they really?
They did. And so there are not great. They're kind of low-res pictures. Just with the technology
right.
of the time. But there are pictures of the surface of Venus. That we took in the
was it
us or the Russians? I think it was the Russians. I think it might have been the Russians because they were rushing to get to space.
Hey now,
and
come
I
on.
Like that. Before I even finished that word, you knew what I was doing.
Hey now, yeah, yep,
and
and had to congratulate you. I had to congratulate
you.
It was
the
true back and forth.
You landed that "Hey now" on my joke comment like a rover.
Like a rover. I hit that joke comment from across this desk. Man, I didn't bounce off either. I think I landed.
Man, you stuck
it.
Yeah.
There were no like thrusters that had to swing me back.
You were like Carrie Strug. Remember that that reference?
Carrie Strug?
Strug? Strug?
Strug? Oh, the gymnast?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
she did a perfect landing with a broken ankle.
With a broken ankle.
Yeah.
I remember that. And then Bella kind of carried her off, right, in a very, very romantic, heroic way.
Mm-hmm.
Not romantic. I mean, I don't mean it.
Gently made.
I don't mean
it
would infer that this 50-year-old man had some type of untoward relationship with a 15-year-old gymnast. But
Gymnasts aren't human anyway.
I can't do that. Can you do that? No human. No human can.
No. It's not possible. They're creatures. They're grown in a lab at Ancestry.com.
That's all.
she's the son.
When are we going to clone our Olympic gymnast team? I mean, when are we going to do that? When are we going to get...
I don't know, but it's a nature-nurture question.
What was the American Anthem? What was that movie with the gymnast back in the 80s? With the, who is it? Kurt Thomas? Am I ringing any bells? There was a guy, a gymnast, Olympic gymnast, who like had two movies that come out that were like... Like there was Gymkata. Mm-hmm. And anyway.
The gymnastic martial art. The gymnastic, they're basically weaponizing their gymnastics.
That's correct. That was the movie. It was, yeah. Like he was going to pommel horse you to death.
Like if there was a pommel horse near a bank robbery,
yeah,
it was on. But if I remember that, I don't know if you guys remember this.
Let me tell you something.
But the trend of banks having pommel horses in them,
yeah,
lasted like a good 18
good
months.
Good 18 months. And then, and I tell you, they were not robbed very often because of that reason.
No, because then they lowered the rings in front of the vault. So if you have a lot of upper body strength.
How many action lines are from that movie that are like kind of one-liners, like, you know, like, I'm going to make your parallel bars uneven.
Well,
you know, like, you know, I'm going to, you know what I mean? Like,
you're on the,
in
you're
Gymkata,
on the rings and then you swing and kick someone in the face and say, ring a bell, you know, like,
there it
stuff
is.
Like
there
that.
It is. That's all I'm asking for.
Horsing around.
Yeah.
You know,
how about I somersault this?
Yeah. Welcome, Matt. I don't know.
Yeah. That just happens to be a guy named Matt who's coming into the house.
Yeah, yeah,
in that
yeah.
Particular...
They were just welcoming him in.
Yeah.
He was
in that particular scenario.
Yeah.
Gymkata.
And then, like, so like, he does a flip off the horse and right. Lands and then, like, let's get leotarded in here.
Here we go.
Like, was another one.
Sorry, I don't... It's all your vault, not mine.
Vault. Vault. Bank vault. Vault.
Vault. Vault. Here we go.
Pole vault. Bank vault.
Pole vault.
Pole
bank vault.
Vault.
It's there. It's there.
Yeah, yeah,
it's
yeah.
There. Iron Cross.
That one's pretty
good.
What
else good. Do they do in...
What do they call the routine where they just... The tumbling.
Floor exercise.
The tumbling.
Tumbling.
I'm going to tumble while
tumble
I...
Tumble for you.
Culture Club.
There's a vault. There's
now we're just free associating.
Yeah.
Culture Club. Club Sandwich.
Now we're just free associating.
Club Sandwich. The Sandwich Brothers. It was...
Sandwich brothers, sister, brother, sister,
sister, Subway, Subway, eat fresh,
Subway, eat fresh,
fresh, she's fresh,
$5 food,
exciting.
When improv goes bad,
yeah, like
improv goes to like jingles.
By the way, guys, improv is not just free associating.
for all you students out there,
free associating, the association of old elderly people, AARP.
PP
on my old tits. We're back to that.
We're back to that.
Yep. We're back to that. I mean, old tits do look like gym equipment.
They do. They look sack like.
Yeah, they're sack like.
You know,
like an old, like a punching bag that would be in an old timey gym.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's,
yeah. That's what it's like.
That's
to
what it's
jerk
like
you
to
motorboat. You have old balls.
Yeah.
Okay. We went to the same.
We went there.
We kind of like.
We went there.
Similar. We just there was a gender.
There was a gender discrepancy, but
yeah.
There were sacks of flesh.
You know, I always say this about Latrulio. I go balls. He goes tits. Like, that's how we. And so
that's
how we
look.
Live together.
That's how we live today.
What do you want to? How many? What do you want to plug today, Joe? You want to plug your show?
I forgot all about that. Yeah.
You want to plug your show?
yes.
You want to promote Beef?
I would like to promote Beef. I would like to talk about a little digital series called Beef that I did with Michael Ian Black and Chris Maloney.
Yep.
And a handful of funny
MIB.
People. MIB Beef. Real quick, anyone that doesn't know, which maybe a lot of people, Beef is a courtroom, a funny courtroom show. It's kind of Sopranos meets Judge Judy. And you have Chris Maloney, neighborhood institution, Lou, settling beefs of the neighborhood folk that come in and need some validation from Lou, our hero. And it's funny. We've got a lot of great people. Lizzie Kaplan, Tom Lennon, Horatio Sanz, Kerry Kenny.
Great.
Michael Cera. It's just an incredible group of people to work with.
and I'm really proud of it.
I'm very nice. I'm glad. I'm very nice.
There's
to hear
no
that.
There's no kind of funny twist on it. It's a really
English, not my first language. Very nice to hear that.
Very nice to hear that.
Yeah.
So glad you decided to say that.
So good to say. No, but it's good to. Are you guys done with the? Is it?
We're done. We're done. It's on iTunes and Amazon right now, and you can get it in a. You have to download the whole thing. 2.5 hours of this.
What are you, U2?
Yeah.
Tell me what I have to download.
There you go.
How
there
dare you?
You know what? You do what you want.
Okay, Bono. I'll download all of it.
Okay, fly. Whatever you say, Mephisto. No, you're exactly really... right. You do what you want. You watch it how you want. You download it how you want. That's okay. The great thing about it.
Good. Good. And you're done? You guys are done with it?
We're done with it. We did 15 episodes, and we hope to do more. Everyone had a really good time, and the people who made it seem to really like it. Maybe they'll give us another shot season two.
I hope people continue to watch you do things, Joe, because you're very talented and a delightful man, and I'm glad that you dragged yourself out of bed today.
It was a pleasure.
To come in and make ball and tip jokes.
Well, thank you, Chris. And I'm really happy that we were able to have a nice chat.
It was nice.
And thank you for having me on.
Old friend. You should come to I'm having a little birthday party tomorrow night.
Where?
It's at a bowling center.
Which one? Lucky Strike?
No. All-Star Lanes.
I will absolutely come by.
Okay, good. It'll be fun.
I'm going to come by and bowl. I'm not a good bowler, though.
That's all right. I am a very good bowler. But I don't want to... You know,
now you just scared me off, I think.
I just want to let you know.
Are you going to do the kind of John Turturro, you know, with the ball? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, yeah. Is that what you do?
The
you
ball
kind of
polishing?
Like, mm-hmm. Like, I'm doing this, but no one listening to this can see what I'm doing. But I'm like,
yeah,
I'm like polishing a bowling ball, everyone.
Joe's getting a very good cardio workout now with some excellent ball polishing space work. Yeah, it is. I like the bowling.
Do you do the like
oh,
the
yeah.
tour the twist
yes.
the curve
all of it?
God, I'm envious.
Yeah, it's good.
Oh, I want to learn how to be a good bowler.
All right,
I'm gonna do it tomorrow. At your
I'll
party.
Teach you. Yeah, I'll teach you. Your name looks like it belongs in the back of a bowling shirt.
Just you're right,
Joe Latrulio.
You're right.
Like if ever there was a guy
that needed a name on the back of a bowling shirt,
bowling for A1 air conditioners.
A1.
Yeah.
A1 air conditioners. What are you going to do about it?
Latrulio! The anchor! This fucking guy!
This fucking guy. Just like a logo with...
This fucking guy. How many different ways can you say, this fucking guy? This fucking guy. This fucking guy. This fucking guy. This fucking guy. Yeah. This fucking guy.
I think you close with that. I think you close with that.
Enjoy your burrito, everyone. Just like this fucking guy.
That was so much fun, man.
So good.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode is brought to you by the effortlessly scrumptious bite of Skinny Pop Popcorn. Imagine this. Perfectly popped, endlessly delicious kernels, a symphony of just 3 simple ingredients. Popcorn, sunflower oil, and a sprinkle of salt. No compromise, just pure snacking freedom. And hey, if you're up for a twist... Dive into flavors like zesty white cheddar to sweet and salty kettle. Every bite's a delight, light and oh so tasty. Shop Skinny Pop now.